James Corbett, I want you to tell our listeners your take on what's going on today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. It's always great to be here. And absolutely, over the past week, we have seen a precipitous rise in bond rates, in yields, especially for the longer-term 10-year treasuries. This is directly related to what we talked about last week. We said that it was going to be a meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee that would be driving markets in that week, and it certainly was. There was a meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee last Wednesday that was definitely a pretty big event in the markets and did drive things towards where we're seeing them right now. In fact, as you mentioned, bond rates are rising right now. That means the value of the bonds are declining. And in fact, over the past month or so, bond rates have risen almost 100 basis points from 1.62% in early May to 2.66%. They're now around 2.55%. So it has been quite a rise, and this is just more signs, if any were needed, that the bond markets are getting spooked by the idea that the Federal Reserve is going to stop its $85 billion injection of money into the bonds and mortgage-backed securities per month that they're currently doing. So this is
sooner or later, Ben Bernanke has to cut back on creating $85 billion out of nothing every single month, because if he doesn't, he'll destroy the value of the currency. And yet if he cuts back, of course, the bond rates will go up and the whole system will begin to slow down, and that will destroy the stability of the system. It seems that no matter what they do, they're in sort of a lose-lose proposition, aren't they?
I think that's exactly the case, and we're starting to see the rock and the hard place here.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this afternoon, James Corbett, who writes, as you know, for the International Forecaster, who has his own publication going into the background of the financial situation, and just last week for the Open Market Committee. So they met on Wednesday, and basically, of course, the interest rates have been going up for about a week now. And as the interest rates goes up, the price of bonds drops. And suddenly, basically, the interest rates have gone up from about, what was it, about 1.5% to over 2, what is it now?
That's right. It was 1.62% on May 2nd. Right. It's now 2.55% at the moment.
That's almost not quite, what is it, 30 or 40% increase in the interest on the bonds?
It is quite a remarkable rise over the past 2 months. And this is basically due to investor worries about what the Federal Reserve is doing. And as I say, there was the meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee last week that was absolutely central to this. And for people who don't know, the Federal Open Market Committee is the Federal Reserve meeting group that decides on the whether the Federal will be buying or selling treasuries and by how much. And in this day and age, that's really only a question of how much they're going to buy. And so this is where people were expecting there would be some sort of announcement on the QE3 and QE Infinity. Will they continue buying treasuries out into infinity, or will there be a stop to this in the near future? In fact, the actual press release from the Open Market Committee meeting shows that they're continuing exactly as before to do the $85 billion a month. It was in the press conference after the meeting with Chairman Ben Bernanke that he mentioned that there is a plan that perhaps by the end of this year, they'll start to taper down with the $85 billion a month, and they might even be stopping their bond purchases by mid-2014. And this sent those markets into a panic and started a sell-off of bonds. And so we're seeing the bonds lowering in value. That means rates are rising. That means it's getting more expensive for the federal government to print money.
And basically, ladies and gentlemen, Chris, basically, we have a totally fraudulent system. Basically, you have a group of people who are supposed to be smart enough to make the whole thing run, and they're not going to be smart enough to make the whole thing run. But basically, what they should do, of course, is raise the interest rates dramatically and cut back, certainly, on the potential for inflation. Well, right now, we don't have much inflation because the banks aren't lending money. The corporations are not spending money, but the money is all there. And one of these days, this whole house of cards is coming down. And with it will come the pensions, the annuities, the insurance policies, the bonds, the savings, the financial security of the vast majority of people listening to this program. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Hello, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is James Corbett, and we're talking about the fact that we're really living in exciting times. The market was down over 500 points last week, and then of course, it was down another 130, 136 points today, something like that. But why in heaven's name is the price of gold and silver falling? I would think that with the financial instability that is existing throughout the world today, that the price of gold and silver would be going up, and people would be wanting to get into something of inherent value. Instead, the price is simply collapsing. Is this certainly having anything to do with market supply and demand? Or does this represent the fact that there's a small group of people who control most of the banking and most of the wealth of the world, and they're manipulating things?
Well, my money's on the latter, but the theory, at any rate, would be that because the Federal Reserve is going to be cutting back on bond buying, this is going to increase the value of the dollar, at least in the short term, because they're going to be printing less of the dollars, theoretically, because of the cutback in bond buying. Less dollars means that the dollar's worth more, means that commodities like gold and oil and other commodities basically fell across the board last week. So that's the theory that's driving these markets, but I think you're exactly right that there's more manipulation going on than actual response to what's happening on the ground, especially as we've seen in recent weeks and months, demand, physical demand for gold in places like China and India only continues to increase. In fact, there's some pretty startling pictures of a Chinese, of a gold trader in Shanghai who had a one-day sale on gold. It was something like, I don't know, 5 or 10% off sale. And it attracted tens of thousands of people to their location. And if you look at the pictures online of people lined up outside the store to try to get their hands on the gold, absolutely just amazing, just stunning. So I think there is obviously a huge disconnect between the physical demand and what's happening in the futures markets for gold and the prices, the nominal price in dollars. And this is, I think, it's only going to continue to be exacerbated. And once again, I would say to the people who are looking at this quote-unquote correction in gold and wondering, you know, what's happening from here, I would just once again say, well, who are the suckers who are invested in gold? Who are these idiots who are buying gold? Well, it happens to be the central banks of the world who are increasing their gold holdings at the highest rates that they've done in decades. And, of course, being led along the way by Russia. What is it that these central banks know that the average investor doesn't seem to know about gold? And that's, once again, that gold is likely to be the thing that will recapitalize the system once this current system collapses. And I think that that's exactly what we're looking at in the long term. And that's exactly why gold, I think, remains a good investment no matter what's happening with the dollar value in this or that month.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California, it's 464-8295. If you have a question or comment for James Corbett, who certainly is on the front lines of this battle and writes his own newsletter as well as writes regular articles for the International Forecaster. Now, my understanding is that they're having some real problems in China. In other words, they basically, they've had a decline in their stock market over there, the economy slowing down. Other countries throughout the world are not buying as many Chinese products. Certainly, they've had to raise the interest rates, the salaries over there, and so the profit margins are certainly falling. What do you hear about this?
Well, you're exactly right. If the Federal Reserve was driving markets last week, then it's Chinese economic data that seems to be pushing things even lower this week. So we've seen a release of information from China showing that there's basically a weakening going on across the board in the Chinese private sector, including corporate borrowing has been down in the second quarter, and retail and services sectors are both slumping right now. So we have seen a decline in the Chinese economy, and that is working its way through the markets this week as well, as more of that data continues to come out. This is just part of a longer-term trend in which Chinese economic activity has definitely cooled off from its earlier incredible rates, unsustainable rates of economic growth. And what we're seeing now is some of that reaction starting to work its way across the markets. So we've seen, for example, the S&P 500 has slumped to a new 9-week low. And a lot of that coming after the Chinese equities started their bear market. So definitely China is one of the things that's driving these markets. But it's also important to see just how far ridiculous things of no consequence whatsoever are driving markets. As I mentioned, of course, last week, the Federal Reserve's decision about bond purchases was one of the things that was really starting that precipitous sell-off that we saw last week. But one of the things that supposedly has put the brakes on the bond yield rate rise is a Federal Reserve, Dallas Federal Reserve President Richard Fisher was quoted in the Financial Times as saying that that people reacting to the Fed were basically like feral hogs. And apparently everyone on the in the financial headlines this week are saying this feral hogs comment is what put the brakes on investors selling off bonds. And now the rates are starting to go back down. So if that's true, I don't know what's worse, if that's true or if that's not true. Because if it's not true, then the financial media are just making up whatever they feel like in order to talk about which way rate rises are going, etc. But if it's not, if it is true, then that's just a sad indictment of the economy in general, that a comment about feral hogs by a Federal Reserve president there in Dallas can actually drive the bond market, the trillion-dollar bond market, the biggest bond market in the world. That's a pretty sad indictment of where we are, that such tiny trivialities are having such huge effects on us, on so many people.
Well, basically, now, what about Europe? My understanding, certainly we know that, I think it's 27%. Unemployment in Greece is pretty close to 58-60% unemployment of the youth there. And certainly the southern countries in Europe are not doing well financially. And basically, of course, now they're talking about having to recapitalize. Greece, we just recapitalized it. I mean, we lent money to the European Central Bank, and they were lending money to Greece because they've got all these wonderful welfare programs, but they don't have enough money to pay for them. And so basically, of course, we have to lend money so that they can simply provide all these wonderful benefits for all the people. And then right here in America, one reason we have to, of course, to borrow, the federal government has to borrow almost $1 billion this last year, was because we have all these wonderful programs. We've got food stamps for, 48.8 million Americans. Isn't that wonderful? The only trouble is we don't have the money to pay them. We've got Social Security and Medicare, but there's not enough money coming out of the programs to pay it. In other words, the Ponzi scheme works when you have enough money coming in so that you can keep paying out to get more people into the program. The problem is we don't have enough money to pay out for Social Security and Medicare, so they have to keep borrowing money for all of these wonderful things. And yet the people in Washington, D.C. seem intent upon continuing to spend more and more and more money without ever wondering where it's coming from. What are your thoughts?
Well, unfortunately, you're right about what you're talking about there. And of course, Europe is one of those ongoing crises that's been ongoing for years now. And people are once again turning to it as they start to see things collapsing. For example, in the U.S. bond market now, attention is being turned back to Europe and the European bond market and the sovereign debt crisis and all of this. And I think one of the pressure points in Europe is going to be the banking sector. We saw, for instance, recently some information was released that European intrabank lending is at across border intrabank lending is approaching all-time lows in the Eurozone period. That basically means that banks are more and more afraid to lend to each other across borders within the Eurozone. And we could look at such things as what happened in Cyprus recently as an example of why that might be the case. Basically, they're afraid of what will happen in the event of bank collapses, etc. This goes to, I think, give the lie to the European Union in general that this is some sort of union with some sort of common market. If banks are basically respecting borders when it comes to what banks they're going to lend to, that's one more sign that at base, underneath, the European Union is really just a union in name only, and that people aren't treating it as a real thing. And we see more volatility hitting the European bank sector. Right now, there's some talks ongoing between European finance ministers about, in the event of a European banking collapse, like if there's a bank that goes under in any given country, they're trying to agree on common rules about who will pay for that bank collapse. And obviously, again, thinking about what happened in Cyprus and trying to think of ways to institutionalize or formalize what happens in the event of any banking collapse anywhere in the Eurozone. his own. But there's a lot of division over it, and they are at an impasse right now in those negotiations. They're not really able to come to any decision right now or to hammer out some sort of common rule. So again, I think the European Union, again, is just so deeply divided, so fundamentally divided, especially between that north-south divide that you mentioned, with the south just really continuing to stagnate and slump and the north basically propping them up, that I don't think that there's any possible way that this union can exist except as a theoretical entity on paper, on the books. But as an actual on-the-ground reality, the Eurozone, I think, has already been a failure, and it's just a question of when the markets will catch up and realize that.
Well, I think people have to understand there is an agenda. Basically, there's a group of people who want a world government. That is their major goal and objective. And basically, of course, they established it in the European Union, but it was only to facilitate travel. And then, of course, they established the European currency. It was only to make it easier to have money go from country to country. It wasn't to give up sovereignty. And, of course, that's what they told the people. And they're simply lying. They want certain nations to give up sovereignty. They want our nation to give up sovereignty. And you just shifted it certainly into the North American free trade zone. And there'll be certainly a NAFTA. There'll be certainly a South American free trade zone. There'll be a European, United States of Europe, United States of Africa. This is part of this dream, this ancient dream going back thousands of years for a world government. And the people don't want it. Economically, it's not sound. But they're going to pursue it. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We've got a couple of callers, and we'll get to them in just a moment. But give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-2295. We're entering the most difficult and dangerous financial times of your life. Well, we've got Vincent calling from North Carolina. Hi, Vincent. How are we doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Dr. Stan. This is Corbett. Thanks for taking my call. I have heard what Mr. Corbett was saying about the way that was Ben Bernanke said that he was going to use the Fed bond buying. But the other thing that I've heard, I listened to a few other shows when I could stand it. In the morning, I heard the Wall Street Journal report say that in 2014, the Fed was going to print more money than it had in the past 100 years. If you've heard that or have a comment on that?
What about this? They were saying that Fed was going to increase their printing of money. Hear anything at all about that?
I did see a quote to that effect, but my reading of that quotation was that the Federal Reserve is currently, in the course of this year, is printing more money than in the past 100 years. And I think that's a reference to the almost $1 trillion that they're putting on the books through the QE3 and QE Infinity. I don't think that was about 2014 specifically, or at least that wasn't the way I was reading that quotation. So I think that that's more about the ongoing bond buying programs.
Vincent, I think basically, Chris, you have to understand that it was just a few years ago, probably about the year 2000, we had about $500 million in circulation, $500 billion. Now we've got over $3.2 trillion in circulation. They've increased the amount of money out there almost six times in the last a little over a decade. And this is a path to disaster. Any questions or comments on that, Vincent?
I agree. I don't know how long it can continue, but I'm kind of wondering if this isn't, the price of gold and silver going down is creating an opportunity for certain people to be able to stockpile on those.
I think the wealthy are doing that, and certainly was James's point that the central banks are in there very quietly buying gold. They're doing everything they can to get the common people to get rid of theirs, but it's not working. The average person is not selling their gold, and in places like China and in India, an average person is out there buying gold frantically to the point where they're doing everything they can. And certainly, as far as silver is concerned, the price of silver is just dropping precipitously, and there's none for sale. How can you drop the price when there's none for sale? Because you have a small group of people who manipulate the whole thing. James, how would you comment?
Well, I would say it's not only central banks that I think are using this buying opportunity in gold. I think that I can't remember off the top of my head who it was. I believe it was Paul Craig Roberts that I was interviewing recently, who said that the bullion banks were basically just going to use this as an opportunity to cover their shorts. And once they'd done that in the gold and silver markets, they were going to switch long, and we were going to see the run-up in prices. And there are rumors out there that I don't know if this has been confirmed yet, but the J.P. Morgan is going long gold secretly through some of their back room dealings. So again, I think that this is part of the long-term plan. I think that there's a lot of banks that have been caught on the wrong side of gold and silver for a while, and I think they're going to use this as an attempt to basically switch things around and ride it as it starts to go back up.
Anything else, Vincent, you want to say before we let you go?
I think that pretty much covers all my questions I had. I appreciate your time.
God bless. Thanks very much. Appreciate you being with us, and we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Now, of course, our guest this afternoon is James Corbett. We've got Bob calling from Kennewick, Washington. Hi, Bob. How are we doing?
Great, Doctor. Thank you very much for taking my call. And you two gentlemen do such a wonderful work, and praise God for it. My quick question is there presently a tax on, well, if you sell gold, you would be taxed now, or is there something in the Obamacare package for 2014? Can you help me there at all?
A tax for selling gold?
Yeah, basically, if you make a profit on gold, you have to pay an income tax, don't you? And you have to actually pay. You can't pay capital gains yet. They wanted to get regular income tax because they want to discourage people from buying gold. But that what this means is people don't sell their gold. They hang on to it. They don't want to sell gold at a loss. And so basically, they're not going to suddenly sell gold. They're going to hang on to it until you get a capital gains. Or maybe someday, maybe they'll even do away with the taxes on gold. It'll be the only legitimate currency when the whole house of cards comes down. What are your thoughts, James?
Well, I'd have to defer to you on that one. I'm not sure exactly how the gold taxes work in the United States. I'm here in Japan, so I don't know about that specifically. But I would assume you're exactly right that when and if it's cashed in, that it would be taxable as income tax. But other than that, I don't know.
Anything else, Bob?
Well, that'll do it. Thank you very much.
Okay, fine. God bless.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Patrick, who's calling from Spokane. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Patrick. How are we doing?
We're doing good.
Have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, I have two-part question for you and Mr. Corbett.
Okay, one at a time. Go ahead.
All right. My first one is, don't you think you and Mr. Corbin and anybody else on the radio, all of us, are sort of like a dog chasing its tail? When we haven't even gotten the truth on the assassination of President Kennedy.
Well, I know, but we're not talking about President Kennedy. Yes, there's no question that he was killed by people at highest levels of government. If you listen to our programs, why we have all sorts of interviews with people who knew exactly what was happening, including President Johnson's mistress and the brother of Sam Giancana, who actually engineered the whole murder of President Kennedy. We have this material, but why talk about that? We're talking today specifically about the economic system. Do you have a question?
I do, and I'm going to go right back to that. How can we believe? I mean, are not we being so manipulated from the top, even in the financial realm? Are, you know, the people that assassinated Kennedy, aren't they the same group that are still just, you know, controlling everything? And they're, you know, we're following them.
No, well, that's why you listen to my programs and programs like this, so that you get the truth. What are your thoughts on that, James? Patrick is trying to make the point. Look, basically, because most of what we're getting today is they're confused. They're trying to, the same people who killed Kennedy are controlling the news today. They're manipulating everything as they manipulated past events. How do you feel about his statement and his sentiments?
Well, I think there's a couple of things to say. First of all, the fact that John F. Kennedy was assassinated by elements within the U.S. Government and in intelligence services is by now a fact that's not even really disputed. Something upwards of 80 to 90% of Americans in most polls believe that he was assassinated as the result of a conspiracy. So at any rate, whether or not we have the final truth or we have the inside documents that prove what happened, at any rate, the people aren't buying what the supposed would-be elite are selling, in that case specifically. And I think that applies across the board as well. I think that goes to the heart of what we're doing and why we're doing it. If there weren't alternative voices out there that were talking about these things and exposing them on a daily basis, I don't think it would be 80 to 90% of the population that understood that the Kennedy assassination was a conspiracy, or that gold is manipulated, or that any of the other things that we often talk about here. So I think that that's the value that we are attempting to bring to the public, which is basically to be that voice in the wilderness that's crying out. And whether that will fundamentally change the system as it exists or not, I think is ultimately up to the people out there, and whether they're going to start to take the actions that are necessary to get themselves off of this system altogether. And we've talked about that before. Alternative currencies and local exchanges and the like is going to be the ultimate solution. It's not going to come from on high or hoping for political change. So I think that would be my response to that.
Patrick, I do five hours of talk radio a day to try to get people to think. And basically, you don't have the opportunity to talk to people I do, but you'll be amazed at how many people do know there's a problem and have only learned about it recently. Go ahead. What are your thoughts?
My second part of my question is not the U.S. dollar controlling, being able to control oil, is that the ultimate position that allows whoever is controlling the dollar controls oil?
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
All right.
While the storm clouds gather all across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so safe.
Well, James, Patrick is talking about the relationship between oil and the dollar, and the people who control the dollar control oil, or the people who control oil control the dollar, or what's the relationship?
Since the 1970s, the dollar has been propped up by oil and the fact that the international oil conglomerate prices their oil in dollars. So people need to use dollars to transact in oil for the most part, and that has propped up the value of the dollar ever since Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard. So there is an absolute inextricable link between the two, and basically the petrodollar is upheld at the barrel of a gun. I think the implication is that if Saudi Arabia or if any of these other oil traders wanted to go off of the plantation and started pricing their oil not in dollars, there would be military consequences to that. And of course, we've seen that with places like Iraq and now Iran and other places that have attempted to start oil bursts that aren't priced in dollars. They definitely see the end of that barrel of the gun. So I think that's basically been the relationship for the past 3 or 4 decades now anyway.
But I do really believe this is all beginning to change, and certainly we know that China now is certainly dealing with Iran. Since we've told them they can't use dollars, they're using gold and other things, and the same thing is increasingly happening between, certainly, I think, Iran and India and Iran and other countries. And we, in many ways, have actually created a situation which may very well destroy the predominance of the dollar in our effort to crush Iran and to force them to follow our line. Why we're forcing the other countries to begin to move away from the dollar as the sole means of purchasing oil. What are your thoughts on that, James?
I think you're exactly right. I think the harder the U.S. pushes on that nerve, the more they're basically creating an alternative power block that's going to be resistant to that. So we certainly see Iran and the people who are trading with them are obviously going to have to find other ways of doing it than through the U.S. dollar. So they're basically creating that alternative system that is, I think, probably going to gain in prominence as players like China, which of course is absolutely ravenous for oil and gas, continue to find other ways to source that oil and gas. I think there will be a gradual move away from the dollar. And we've certainly seen bilateral deals between China and just about every country starting to be priced in local currencies, not in dollars.
Hold the thought, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Patrick calling from Spokane, asking about the relationship between the dollar and oil. And the oil has been priced in dollars for the last 30 or 40 years, which has really, of course, made the dollar the preeminent currency. And it seems like our leaders are doing everything they can to destroy that. And, of course, they're saying to Iran, of course, we are not going to allow anybody to buy oil from you with dollars. So you can't use dollars, and we're going to hurt you that way, and we're going to force you to do what we want. And Iran's saying, sure, well, we'll just trade in gold, and this is increasingly happening. And it's almost as if our leaders in Washington, D.C. are intent upon destroying the whole existing world monetary system. We live in a world gone mad, Patrick, and only a few of us are sane enough to see what's going on, and everybody else simply nods in assent. Any other thoughts before we let you go?
Well, my thought would be is I think China's on our side, because if Iran is allowed to get atomic energy, Iran, I think Israel is going to give atomic energy to Taiwan. That's an atomic bomb right off China. I think China's with us, isn't it?
Okay.
That's the end of it.
Okay.
And I'll end with that.
Okay, fine. I appreciate your thoughts. Thanks so very much. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-2295. We've got a couple of callers, but before we go on, James, I want you to tell our listeners how they can subscribe to the International Forecaster. I want you to tell them how they can get in touch with you and get your own personal newsletter and subscribe to that if they'd like. Go right ahead.
All right. Well, thank you for that opportunity. If people are interested in the Forecaster, they can go to theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word, theinternationalforecaster.com. And when you're there, you can find previous articles that I've written and other people have written for the Forecaster. You can also get an introductory copy, a free introductory copy of the newsletter if it is your first time subscribing. And you can also, of course, sign up to subscribe right there from that website if you choose to do so. Again, that comes out twice a week and somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 pages per week per issue. So it's a lot of information packed into each issue. And if you want to write in directly via mail, you can write in PO Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's PO Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883, and you can find more information about the Forecaster that way. If people are interested in my own work, I'm at CorbettReport.com. Again, that's all one word, Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. And there you can find all sorts of information about not only the media that I have there freely available for download, but also my DVDs and my newsletter. And you can also find a contact form there if you want to contact me directly.
All right, fine. Well, then let's go to John, who's calling us from Spokane. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-2295. And basically, it's Joseph from Georgia we have. Hi, Joseph. Question or comment?
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, I got two questions about China. You know, the Chinese they're holding a lot of our debt and a lot of other foreign,
right,
you know, their currency reserves. And just, I mean, the Chinese control their bank like, we should have had ours under control by our Constitution instead of private banks. And who are they really in debt to? That, you know, I've seen on the business report here just this evening, oh, the Chinese debt. Well, who's the Chinese really in debt to?
Well, it's the people who bought the bombs. Would that be a fair statement, James?
Yeah, but who's holding, I mean, compared to how much China's holding of other countries, you know, it seems like, just how much Chinese debt would be out there, I mean.
Well, James, would you like to comment on that? Basically, how much debt does China have? Who is buying the bonds, of Chinese bonds? And I think, are they a good investment or a bad investment at this time?
Well, I would have to say that given China's precarious situation that they couldn't be a good thing. But yes, China does have a public debt and they do issue bonds, and those are purchased, as far as I know, on the open markets. So again, there are individual investors and bank investors, as far as I know. But in detail, I mean, who owns how much of China's debt? I'm not really sure about that. So I think that's something that's definitely worth looking into.
But I will tell you, Joseph, that basically a lot of very wealthy Chinese and Chinese corporations have a lot of American dollars, and they're coming up over here, and they're buying up some major corporations, you know, for a couple of billion dollars here and a couple of billion dollars there, and the Chinese are buying American industry, and basically we're losing control over it, and the Chinese, who are very, very smart and very industrious, are buying property. It said as many as one in every 10 houses that being sold in America is being bought by the Chinese for rental. They want to get out of dollars. They want to get them to something tangible. They're a lot smarter than the American people, unfortunately. Anything else? Did you have another question, Joseph?
Well, just one more quick one on, you know, I heard China, you know, they built these big ghost cities and they plan to, you know, relocate a bunch of rural people to the cities. But what would they be planning that after an economic big downturn, almost like a big collapse, like, you know, a real, you know, they built those cities for a reason, but they hadn't, it would have to be like a forced relocation or something.
Well, do you have a thought on that, James? And then I'll tell Joseph what I think. But what are your thoughts, James?
Well, it would be a forced relocation in many ways, but that's only because everything that's done in the Chinese society is really forced in one way or another, including where people can live. And for people who don't know, basically, even if you want to move to a city like Beijing, when you're in China, you have to get a special permit from the government. And there are people who are allowed to live in the cities, whereas other people are rural. So basically, the government does, to a large extent, determine where and how and when people move anyway. So the creation of these giant cities is quite an incredible thing. In fact, it's going to be the largest migration in the history of humanity once it's done. I can't remember the numbers, but it's some startling number of however many tens or is it hundreds of millions of people are going to be moved into these cities over the course of the next 10 years. So it is quite almost an unthinkable large project that's going on right now that isn't being talked about a lot, but it is just it's happening right now, and it's going to be driving Chinese markets for the next decade.
And basically, Joseph, my view is that there is a master plan for everything going on today. It's called Agenda 21. It is the agenda for the 21st century. I said Al Gore referred to it as the wrenching transformation of society. And it's not just American society. It's the whole world society. And basically, if you haven't seen my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan, or the talk by our good friend Michael Shaw on Agenda 21, the wrenching transformation of society, we have both of those DVDs, but you can go off on the Internet and read it as well. And again, we carry a book, so Sustainable America, put out by our government. But they want to totally transform everything. They want, of course, to get people out of their homes here in America, but the Chinese want to do the same thing. They want to get them into something, stack and pack homes, basically where they can be watched and monitored. At least those who survive the coming Holocaust, they want to get people out of their cars. They want to get people onto bicycles. They want to get people onto mass transit. They want to be able to get people to cut back on the use of electricity and water. And basically, they want to transform society. It's called Agenda 21. It's the master plan. It's being implemented, and I think it's going to be implemented in China with Sydney and EMP attack, and it's going to be implemented here in America. And basically, when this happens, the America that we've known will never exist again. Anything else you want, Joseph, before we let you go?
Yeah, you know, with this country, you know, they keep crushing us down from within, but everybody, you know, the natural gas, they're finding plenty of that. But the fact is, ain't it that, you know, oil's not as finite as they say, and the world's really awash in oil.
Right.
You know, they've been finding, like, in the Balkans, up in the around the Dakotas, and then they found a big strike in Australia. But oil is not really like you know, they used to say all the old dinosaurs. Remember the old Sinclair stations with Dino the Dinosaur? And oil is actually, the Earth is actually making more oil all of the time, naturally.
You're absolutely right. You know, I wonder how intelligent people could ever believe in that dinosaur theory. And I remember when I was in college and my professor was telling us how all these dinosaurs, they all go to the same place, they all die, and then their body deteriorates and turns into oil. And all the students believed that. They lie to us in college. They lie to us at every term. They lie to us on the Discovery Channel. The world is awash with oil, and they didn't come from dinosaurs, believe me, because there ain't enough dinosaurs in Saudi Arabia to accomplish what they've accomplished. It all comes from methane, but that's another story for another time. Anyway, God bless. Thanks very much for calling. And let's go to John, who's calling us from Spokane. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Here in the Central Coast of California, and ladies and gentlemen, if you believe that oil comes from dinosaurs the way you're supposed to, you're incredibly naive. Most of what you learned in college, what's most you hear on the Discovery Channel and on the History Channel and on television, and most of what they're programming our children to believe today, just is not true. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the reason I do what I do 5 hours a day is so at least there'll be some people who understand what's going on and will be able to pass the truth on to generations yet unborn. Hi, John. Question or comment?
Yes, it's good to hear you again. I was just wondering, I heard a local program here in Spokane yesterday afternoon mentioned that the dollar index is a bogus index that was created by the monopoly manipulators, and the dollar index is composed of 5 different currencies, U.S., Canada, Great Britain, and 2 others. Does Mr. Corbett know about that?
Well, basically, what is the point again? That basically we have a basket of currencies, and that is the basis of the value of international trade. Is that the point you're making, John?
Yeah, I was wondering if this dollar index currency is supposed to oppose the BRICS currency.
The what currency is supposed to oppose this currency?
The dollar index.
Yeah, right.
It's opposing the British currency as kind of a
James, do you understand anything about that? Could you comment on it?
Well, I know that the dollar index is basically a geometric mean of 6 different currencies. There's the euro, the yen, the sterling, the dollar, the krona, and the franc. And this is just basically a way of measuring the strength of the U.S. dollar, whether or not it's... it's really just a figure that is used to track the relative strength of the dollar versus other major currencies. And I think that there's a lot of room for manipulation in terms of how much emphasis is given to what foreign currencies in that. And I personally don't really keep track of the dollar index because I don't think it's particularly useful as a tool, but I don't think that it really drives markets in a fundamental way.
John, I think you have to understand that initially, of course, the gold was tied to the dollar. Gold was the basis for it, and basically then, of course, the Roosevelt administration said Americans can't have gold, but everybody else in the world can have gold, and so basically other countries could redeem dollars for gold. But as we printed more and more dollars, of course, President de Gaulle of France and others said, look, America's just printing all these dollars, they're redeemable for gold, but they don't have enough gold. They're just creating all this artificial wealth for themselves, and there's nothing behind it. So they started redeeming dollars for gold, and back then, August 15th, 1971, Richard Nixon temporarily closed the gold window. It was only temporary, but then, of course, they left that window closed, and so we had to have something basically to as the foundation for the world currency system. It could no longer be the dollar, and that's when we had the special drawing rights, which was a bundle of currencies, and as James has said, that became the foundation of the monetary system until recently. But now there's nothing behind it. There's no gold. There's no faith. There's no stable currencies. And nations are actually competing to devalue their currencies, printing more money, trying to stimulate their economies. And the whole house of cards is coming down, in my estimation. Would you agree or disagree with that, James?
No, that sounds about right to me. Certainly, I think the U.S. dollar is perched on a pretty precarious peg, if any at all. And I think it will only take a strong economic wind to blow it over, and we will see the toppling of that. I mean, I can't imagine that it won't take place in our lifetime, but then again, stranger things have happened, so we'll have to see how that unfolds. But I think you're right in your assessment.
John, anything you want to say?
Another thing, the U.S. Constitution says that the states are supposed to operate on a gold standard. And would that imply that the U.S. economy is supposed to be a barter economy?
Would you, it's supposed to be a what economy?
A barter economy.
A barter economy. No, it would basically be a gold, a barter economy is where you don't have gold, and silver, gold and silver becomes the basis of the paper. When you don't have certainly a paper or a gold economy, then you get to a barter economy. What are your thoughts on that, James?
Well, it is in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, no state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of mark and reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Yes, but you're exactly right. Anything but gold and silver coin should be a tender of payment of debt. So that is supposed to be the basis for the U.S. money supply, but obviously it isn't. So the system that is in effect right now is unconstitutional. But other than that, I don't think that that means that the U.S. is supposed to be a barter economy. I think, as you say, it's supposed to be one that at base is backed up by gold and silver.
I think we're into a transition period, John, between a economy that's in crisis and the total collapse. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
No, I think that covers everything.
Okay, God bless. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Dan, who's calling us from Ohio. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Dan, a question or comment?
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Dr. Stan, and nice to hear you both again. You had a caller or a guest on your program, I believe it was last week, named Karen Hudes, H-U-D-E-S.
Yes, Hudes, H-U-D-E-S, and she was certainly an attorney with the World Bank. Fascinating lady, and basically I think we'll put together a four-tape set, and she'll be with us again, later this week, and I think on our evening program.
Well, she had some tremendous advice on there in regard to contacting our governors and demanding that they work on getting us a sound currency. What I'm calling for is, do you have a contact, or how do I get a hold of her, look at her website?
Yes, you can go to her website, and I can't give out her telephone number, but if you go to her website, there should be an email there, and if you can't reach her, I can always try to contact her and get a website for her, but go to her website, H-U-D-E-S, Karen Hudes, and basically you should be able to get in touch with her that way. Very courageous lady who's given up a great deal to stand for righteousness.
She sure has. I didn't get her website, though. Do you have that?
K-A Hudes, K-A-H-U-D-E-S, and I forgot whether it's
gmail.com.
.net, okay. Okay.
That's wonderful. Thanks, fellas.
Okay, God bless. Thanks very much.
God bless you.
Bye-bye. I'm glad you remembered it. Our guest, of course, is James Corbett. We've got to actually about 2 minutes for you to wrap up the program. Go right ahead.
Well, where does one even begin? I think that as we've talked about today, I think that there's a lot of expectation that has been placed on the unlimited printing of money and the unlimited purchase of bonds by the Federal Reserve. And now that we see that starting, at least they're talking about starting to wrap that up, we're going to see that playing out in the markets. And we've already seen some of the some of the big gains that have been made over the past 2 years in the Dow, in the S&P, in the other indicators of wealth have all dropped over the past week, to the point where it shows that exactly as we've been talking about, all of this run-up and all of the hype in the equities and stock markets was a bubble that was created by the Federal Reserve. And we're going to continue to see that play out, and we'll have to see how much they taper and what form the tapering will take when they meet again in September. But for that, for now, I think that the summer markets have basically a tone has been set for the markets for the summer as people start to go on vacation, and it's a downcast mood as people start to go away.
Well, I think it's going to be a difficult time. I think that people who really keep thinking that everything's going to be fine, the market may go back up. I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know that we're standing on quicksand. It's only a matter of time before the foundation gives away, because there is no foundation. Parting thought before we let you go.
I just hope that people will continue to support you and the work that you're doing in getting this word out to the people, because it is a valuable resource in this day and age where basically everything you see on TV and the mainstream news is a lie that's meant to basically capture your mind. So I'm glad that you're out there as the voice that's speaking and giving testament to what's really going on. So my hat's off to you.
I appreciate so much your being with us, James. We'll look forward to talking to you next week, and it should be an interesting week. God bless. Bye-bye.
Take care.